This is a podcast from Deutsche Welle. For more information and a selection of other programs, click on to dwworld.de.
Deutsche Welle. Inspired Minds.
Hello and a very warm welcome to this edition of Inspired Minds. I'm Brendan O'Shea. Today, we meet the film restorer, Grover Crisp.
You know, the process that I'm talking about is pretty much similar to what's called the digital intermediate process now for making motion pictures. That process is basically the template for digital film restoration as well.
The history of film spans some 100 years from the latter part of the 19th century to the present day. And today, digital technology has made restoration possible what many working in the industry would never have dreamed of, even just a few years ago. Well, Grover Crisp is one of the world's most respected and renowned film restorers. He's worked in the motion picture and television industry for over 25 years and currently manages all facets of the restoration, preservation and mastering program for Columbia Pictures and TriStar Pictures feature film and television libraries for Sony Pictures Entertainment. The scope of his work within his department ranges from designing asset protection policies for film and tape to conversion of the studio's nitrate-based titles to safety film to restoration of 1950s stereo soundtracks to the application of new digital technologies for film restoration to the digital mastering of all library titles into high-definition formats. In this capacity, he's worked alongside cinematographers the likes of Conrad L. Hall and John Bailey, and esteemed directors such as Dennis Hopper, Terry Gilliam, and Martin Scorsese. Some titles restored under his direction to date include Easy Rider, Funny Girl, In Cold Blood, Five Easy Pieces, On the Waterfront, and Martin Scorsese's 1976 classic Taxi Driver. Indeed, it was after the screening of this restored version of that very film that I met Grover Crisp and asked him firstly, what were the major challenges involved in restoring a film from the 1970s?
Well, you know, it may seem really recent, but 35 years ago is a long time. And certainly in the history of film, a lot has happened since that time. You know, up until the early 70s at least, and to some degree even with this film, a lot of studios, and certainly mine, they made a lot of their release prints off the original negatives. And that is a fairly punishing physical process that a film negative will go through. It's a very mechanical process. And that can create damage, it can create scratches, and things get dirty and so forth. So it's not that unusual to need to restore film that's only 3 or 4 decades old. You are correct, however, in terms of more recent films, and I would say in the last 20 years, because in the last 20 years, there's been a huge change in how the studios operate, and certainly my studio operates, in how they handle and take care of all their film assets. So, nowadays we wouldn't have such a problem like this, but prior to that time, when there really were no controls, a lot of things could happen and go wrong with a film.
It's slightly frightening when one thinks of all the wonderful treasures that are out there. Now, in the case of this, something that's 35 years old, did Martin Scorsese, who himself is a great champion, of course, of restoring old films, was he sort of looking over your shoulder the whole time when you were doing this? I'm trying to imagine. It's a bit like, it is his baby, isn't it, you know? And one of the most important films in his career, of course.
Sure. No, not at all. He was not looking over anyone's shoulder. First of all, he and I have known each other for some time, and we've worked with their Film Foundation on preserving titles, and also just as a support mechanism. But no, when it comes to his own films, he, at least in my situation, was very much, he recognized what we needed to do and more or less just let us go our own way. We did, however, of course, reach out to him for consultation. We wanted him to see it at different stages. so that we felt we were going in the right direction. We also enlisted the services of the cinematographer. And cinematographers, of course, are key people in the production of the film in terms of how it looks. And so this is actually a standard practice for us on any film that we restore. If the filmmaker is still alive, we will reach out to them and ask for them for guidance. After all, it is their film. Mm-hmm. And we want to, of course, maintain that the original vision that the filmmaker was going for is the thing that we're going for as well.
I'm trying to imagine, of course, you've been involved in this profession since the 70s. You've only just touched on it. Digitalization and what this has done to your profession. Mm-hmm. It must have completely and utterly turned everything upside down. And all of a sudden, the impossible became impossible. And probably there's still a number of frustrating corners where you'd like it to get even better or easier to do some of the aspects of restoration that you're after.
Well, it's certainly not perfect right now, but the possibilities that digital technology offers for film preservation and restoration are enormous, and it allows us to do things that even 5 years ago we couldn't do, and certainly 10, 15, 20 years ago that we could not do. We could not repair, we could not fix problems with film like we can now. Taxi Driver is a perfect example. 15 years ago, for the 20th anniversary, we basically went through a photochemical process to preserve and restore the film at that time, but there were things we couldn't do. There were torn frames in the film that we couldn't fix, we couldn't replace. There were scratches that we couldn't fix. There was no way to do that then, but the digital technologies we have now allow us to go in, and if you're careful, you can bring back, you know, the original image, at least a good approximation of it.
What about the sound of these films? Does it go through a similar sort of process?
Yes, it does. In fact, it follows, the sound follows a very similar path that the picture follows when we're restoring a film. In that, for both sets, picture and sound, we evaluate everything that exists on the film, we select the best materials, and then we send it through a process. For sound, however, digital technologies for doing what we do have existed for most of the last 20 years. The sound, the audio restoration part in terms of digital is far ahead of the picture. So, you know, it's I don't want to say it's easier, but in a lot of ways, you know, you can get things done a little quicker and a little more seamlessly than you can with picture. On Taxi Driver, interestingly enough, and I didn't talk about the sound much before, but we did do a sound restoration of this, but we also did change it. We changed it from mono into stereo, and although the mono still exists and can be played at any time, the music, which is a key ingredient for this film by Bernard Herrmann, the music is actually another character in the film. And the composer recorded the music in four-channel stereo. And when you listen to the four-channel stereo mix, you can tell that he was really taking advantage of that spread, if you will, to emphasize certain aspects in his score related to what was happening on the screen.
I'm wondering, it's a bit like wandering around in a museum, Van Gogh's and Renoir's, and taking one of these, because there are a couple of other classics that you've worked on. Of course, the Bridge Over the River Kwai and Dr. Strangelove. Yeah. How was that somebody came along one day and said, here, we want you to reshuffle these Van Gogh's?
Well, these are great films, of course, and they're huge films in the library of Sony Pictures and Columbia Pictures. Dr. Strangelove, iconic film from the 60s and one of Stanley Kubrick's greatest films. That is a film that was seriously in need of restoration. The original negative, for example, which is well known, was destroyed in the 60s, and it had not existed for many decades. It was always a difficult proposition for the director, of course, something that we were all painfully aware of. But we really couldn't do much with it other than just make new prints off existing materials until, again, in this last decade when the digital technologies have been developed that allow us to go in and do things that we couldn't do before. You know, the process that I'm talking about is pretty much similar to what's called the digital intermediate process now for making motion pictures. You know, where films are shot either on film or they're shot digitally, and they go through a digital process, and you'll see it at the end of every film practically that comes out. You'll see these credits, digital intermediate, colorist, and the facility and so forth. That process is basically the template for digital film restoration as well.
What about films that are older where we're just sort of guessing this is how they would have sounded then, this is how they would have looked?
Well, I think you have to be an archaeologist in a lot of ways to really dig down deep and figure out exactly what something should look or sound like. You know, we do have reference sources that are things that we pull into the mix when we're working on these things, whether they're original Technicolor prints, which basically didn't fade, or they're original prints in an archive somewhere in the world that we collaborate with. We try to make as great an effort as possible to track down as many sources, original sources, as we can, just for that reason, to authenticate the approach and the eventual culmination of, you know, whatever it is we're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Of course, film is also an area of the world where there are buffs and there are purists. Mm-hmm. When you get to the end of something like this, and there must be quite a few people out there that have fairly definite ideas about how film should look and sound, and might not be so happy about the restoration work. Do you come into fire sometimes from purists, film purists?
Well, I count myself in that group, as a matter of fact. And you are right that there are film purists who insist that things should be maintained properly. I completely agree. So one of the guiding principles that we have is that we should do no harm in whatever it is that we're attempting to do. We don't alter the films in any material way. I know that that is something that is quite controversial and something that is popular to do, actually, to make a film, for example, to remove all the film grain and make it look very smooth and modern-like. We don't take that approach at my place. We basically want a film to look like it did in the era in which it was made, only as if it were new in that era. And therefore, we don't remove the film grain and we don't alter it in any other way to make it contemporary. Aside from some things, like I had mentioned earlier, where we may manipulate the sound if we have the original stereo when it wasn't released that way. And I think that is something that is okay as long as you also make the original mono available. And so that's basically how we approach our work. It is to be as authentic as possible.
Film restorer Grover Crisp speaking to me there and bringing us to the end of this week's Inspired Minds. Don't forget the website. You'll find it at dw-world.de/inspiredminds. Levi Rechtenbart helped put together today's show. From me, Brendan O'Shea, it's goodbye from the studios of Deutsche Welle Radio, Bonn, Germany.
You've been listening to a podcast from Deutsche Welle. We hope you enjoyed the program. You'll find more information and podcasts at dwworld.de.